This is The Drive with Josh Graham podcast.
We're internet sensations, guys.
Tune into The Drive weekday afternoons, 3 to 7 on WSJS.
Here we're on a Tuesday drive. It is WSJS, News Talk Sports for the Triad, where today's challenge is going to be staying focused on the top stories and not being distracted by strange, random items that might pop up, such as the Denver Nuggets firing their head coach and GM a week before the NBA playoffs start, despite the fact that they are a real contender, fourth in the Western standings currently. Or maybe even the Detroit Tigers currently handing it to the New York Yankees for a second straight day. Again, WD, these are the topics we don't want to be distracted by.
Just get to
it. We don't want to be distracted by those topics. Okay, let's talk college basketball. On multiple counts, Florida's national championship win was a fitting finish to this college basketball season. For one, Houston and Florida were among the four teams that were historically special this year. Not just special within the context of this season, historically special. KenPom has been ranking teams with advanced metrics since the mid-1990s, 96, 97, their first season doing so. Duke, Houston, Auburn, Florida, the four number one seeds that made it to the Final Four, all among the top 10 all-time KenPom teams. So that's KenPom telling you these four teams are among the four best or among the 10 best that we've seen over the last 30 years in college basketball. So it's fitting that you have two of them in the national championship game. Then they played a memorable final. It came down to the wire, and against Houston's number one ranked defense, it was Florida's defense that stood tall at the end, not allowing the Cougars to get a shot on the final two possessions. Here was Florida head coach Todd Golden on the final sequence.
It's all kind of cloudy and a blur, but the one that sticks out is when I believe it was Sharp drove right off the right lane line, and Will was guarding somebody in the corner, and he stripped and ripped right off his leg with about a minute 10 or a minute to go. That was a huge play for us. And then the last play was just absolutely an amazing play. You know, Walt recovered, closed out, as he said, flew by his right side to not allow himself to foul. Sharp made a heady, you know, he understood he couldn't touch the ball or else it would have been a turnover. And then Kondo, did what he does a lot, which is get physical, dive on the floor, make a winning play, getting on that loose ball. And I think there was 18 seconds or so on that last possession. We guarded him hard, and I saw the ball loose. And, I was just hoping that we beat him to the ball. And when Kondo got on the floor, I figured it was either going to be a jump ball or we were going to come away with it. And then the next thing I knew, the game was over. So just an incredible moment and, something I won't forget.
That was the SEC's first basketball title since 2012, which was certainly deserved because the season they had was historic. You could make the case this is the best season a conference has ever had. It's either this year for the SEC or 1985 for the Big East, where they got three of the Final Four, two playing in the national championship game, Villanova upsetting Georgetown in the final. But you can make the case the SEC had a greater year than that because of the record 14 bids that they got, the dominance in non-conference play, beating the ACC 14-2 in the ACC-SEC Challenge. You get two teams to the Final Four, and yes, you win the championship. It's crazy to think the conference had not won a title in 13 years, and they get it done. They figured out a way at the end. And this Final Four, it's going to be remembered as one of the best that we've seen. Wow, let's be honest. There were a lot of missed shots yesterday. There were a lot of fouls in that second half. How crazy was this disparity? Four fouls total, Will, called in the first half. 23 in the second half of this game. It was ugly. A lot of free throws, a lot of fouls, a lot of free throws, a lot of missed shots. So it wasn't the greatest game, but it was entertaining, and all three of the games were outrageously fun. In fact, how's this for a stat? The team leading at the under four final media timeout in the second half lost all three of the final four games. Auburn leading Florida in the final four, Florida won. Duke leading Houston, Houston, of course, won. And then last night, Houston leading, Florida came from behind to win. It was a fitting way to close this memorable Final Four. It was a fitting way to finish this college basketball season. Florida cutting down nets in San Antonio. On X, at Josh Graham Show and at WSJS Radio, Will Dalton is the executive producer of the show, taking your calls, 336-777-1600. Finally made good on his coffee bet.
Yes, I did.
Didn't even bring it in when you first got here, so still drinking the coffee as the show starts.
I wanted you to have it for the show. I wanted to time it up right. You enjoy that.
Thanks to our friends at Miller's on Robin Hood last night.
Yeah, had some nachos.
Outstanding place to watch sports. That might be a new spot for us to hang out at. We have tickets to two different events to give away in Weekly Positivity later this hour. We have tickets to Merlefest for later this month. We have tickets for Tyler Childers in Raleigh next week. So if you want tickets to either of those shows, make sure you're around for Weekly Positivity later this hour. Today, fitting to do Weekly Positivity. College basketball season's over, and we won't have college hoops for 7 months, so we need to pick people up, and that's what Weekly Positivity is about. Here's something that might pick you up. We are two sleeps away from the start of the Masters in Augusta. So how about we look at who can win this tournament? Will, there's always the chance for the off-the-radar, surprising winner. But in today's golf landscape, there are just so many really good, strong, elite-level players at the top to think that somebody outside of this group of 10 I have here is going to win this tournament. To me, if one of these 10 players does not win, it would be a surprise to me. And there are four tiers of these Masters contenders to consider. So let's dig into it. Scottie Scheffler is in a tier by himself at the top. Some would put Scottie and Rory. Sorry, Rory, you haven't won a green jacket before. You haven't won a major in 11 years. You're not in the same tier as Scottie Scheffler. Scottie's won two of the last three green jackets. Other than Pinehurst last year, he was dominant in all the majors. Great performances. Even when they're throwing him in a prison cell or a jail cell earlier in the day, he comes back out and he's shooting, what, 4-6 under par later in the day in Louisville? After missing the first month of this season with a hand injury, Scottie in his most recent event finished runner-up. So he's starting to heat up, and when he heats up, nobody is better in the sport. So Scottie is at the top in a tier by himself. The second tier, we'll call it, past major champions who are currently playing good golf right now. Rory McIlroy is in this group. For the first time in Rory's career, he has two PGA Tour wins before arriving on Magnolia Lane in Augusta. First time that's happened. So he's playing outstanding golf. Colin Morikawa. This is a stat that matters a ton, particularly at Augusta National, where drivers are greatly rewarded. Strokes gained, very important stat. Colin Morikawa is currently leading the tour in strokes gained, and he's had success recently in major championships. Justin Thomas is playing consistent golf right now, had a runner-up finish recently at the Valspar. So the second tier are past major champions that are playing good golf right now. Rory, Morikawa, Justin Thomas. The next tier are major champs that you just can't write off. You just can't write off these guys. You have to consider them. Three of them are in LIV. It's hard to know what to do with LIV results, but you're not writing off Bryson DeChambeau, especially after what he did at the U.S. Open last year in Pinehurst. You're not writing off Jon Rahm. You'd be crazy to do that. And you'd be crazy to write off Brooks Koepka in a major, we've come to learn. But it's not all live guys in this group. Xander Schauffele, he rounds it out. He's been dealing with an injury a bit, but seems to be rounding back into form, hopefully at the right time, going into this week's Masters. Those are eight names that we've mentioned. There are two wild cards that have not won a major championship that it might just be time for. These are wild cards to take a good close look at. Young Ludvig Åberg, who my wife seems to have a crush on, or did when he was on the screen during the Masters. It's okay. Not the jealous type. He was a runner-up in his first ever Masters start a year ago. He finished second in the Genesis Invitational, but since then has missed a couple of cuts. But again, high-level players, done well in majors, even in Pinehurst, he performed pretty well too. And lastly, there's Victor Hovland, who was kind of lost in the wilderness for a bit, golf-wise, but came out of nowhere. Remember, Justin Thomas was a runner-up in the Valspar? Victor Hovland was the one to win the Valspar. So he wins a tournament. He has all the tools. He can knock the crap out of the ball, which is very important, again, at the Masters. So we'll include him as a wild card as well. If one of these 10 players don't win, it would surprise me. Scottie Scheffler in that top tier by himself. The second tier being major champions currently playing well, Rory, Morikawa, Justin Thomas. Then there are the major champs you just can't write off. Bryson, Rahm, Koepka, and Xander Schauffele, the X-Man. WD knows my love for the X-Man. And then there's the wild cards that haven't won a major title, but keep a close eye on. Ludvig Åberg, Victor Hovland.
You're on the drive with Josh Graham, WSJS.
So glad to have you on a Tuesday drive. It's WSJS, News Talk Sports for the Triad, where today's challenge is going to be staying focused on the top stories and not being distracted by strange random items that might pop up throughout the day, such as the Denver Nuggets firing their head coach a week before the NBA playoffs start, despite the fact they are a real contender, fourth in the Western Conference currently, or even the Detroit Tigers handing it to the Yankees 5-0 today. Again, these are the topics we don't want to be distracted by, Will. We don't want to be deviating away.
Just get to it.
Fine, let's talk college basketball. On multiple counts, Florida's national championship win was a fitting finish to this college basketball season. For one, Houston and Florida, they were among the four teams that were historically special this year. Not just in the context of this season, historically special. KenPom has been charting teams since the mid-1990s. Advanced metrics, grading teams. The 4-1 seeds that made it to San Antonio are among the top 10 KenPom teams of all time. Better than many of the teams that won national championships in the eyes of KenPom. Analytically, 4 of the 10 best teams of the last 30 years. Florida, Houston, Duke, Auburn. Houston and Florida delivered a memorable final as well. Against the Cougs' number one ranked defense, it was Florida's defense that stood tall at the end. Walter Clayton Jr. didn't score a point in the first half. Didn't have a field goal forever in this game. But he had the biggest play of the game defensively in the final seconds. Florida didn't allow Houston to get a shot off on their final two offensive possessions. Here was Florida head coach Todd Golden on the final sequence.
You know, it's all kind of cloudy and a blur, but the one that sticks out is when I believe it was Sharp drove right off the right lane line, and Will was guarding somebody in the corner, and he stripped and ripped right off his leg with about a minute 10 or a minute to go. That was a huge play for us. And then the last play was just absolutely an amazing play. You know, Walt recovered, closed out, as he said, flew by his right side to not allow himself to foul. Sharp made a heady, you know, he understood he couldn't touch the ball or else it would have been a turnover. And then Kondo, did what he does a lot, which is get physical, dive on the floor, make a winning play, getting on that loose ball. And I think there was 18 seconds or so on that last possession. We guarded him hard, and I saw the ball loose. And, I was just hoping that we beat him to the ball. And when Kondo got on the floor, I figured it was either going to be a jump ball or we were going to come away with it. And then the next thing I knew, the game was over. So just an incredible moment and, something I won't forget.
This was the SEC's first basketball title since 2012, which was certainly deserved because the season they enjoyed, also historic. 14 teams in the tournament, that's a record. 14-2 against the ACC in the ACC-SEC Challenge. Two teams in the Final Four in the National Championship. You could make the argument this is the greatest season a conference has ever had in the history of the sport, in the modern history of the sport. So in that way, it was fitting that the SEC is able to finish the job. And this Final Four, it's going to be remembered as one of the best we've ever seen. Now, does that mean every game was awesome? A lot of people conflate close, fun, exciting with being a great game. Last night was not a great game. There were so many missed shots. The best players weren't playing all that well. It was an anticlimactic finish where you didn't have a team getting shots off on their final two possessions. It was outrageously fun. I mean, there were so many fouls, 4 fouls in the first half combined, 23 in the second half. But outrageously fun in that they were very close games between very good teams. In fact, the team leading going into the final media timeout lost all three of the games in San Antonio. Auburn leading in the final 4 minutes against Florida. Duke collapsing, of course, late against Houston, and Houston not being able to close it out against Florida in the title game. Just another reason why this was a fitting finish. On X, at Josh Graham Show and at WSJS Radio, that's where you can watch the show in addition to listening to it on WSJS, however, and wherever you are listening or watching. Greatly appreciate that. Will Dalton, he is the executive producer of this show. We had a good time last night at Miller's on Robin Hood, didn't we?
We did. Great food. The nachos were delicious.
You got yourself a buffalo wrap?
Yes.
Buffalo chicken wrap?
And I'm telling you, it was real beefy. It was thick. Good stuff.
With a K or two C's?
Two C's.
Got it.
Two C's.
Understood. We are two sleeps away from the start of the Masters in Augusta.
Now watch this drive.
So how about we talk about who might win the tournament? When I'm scripting a list here or putting together a list of contenders, I ended up at 10 names. This is where I had a cutoff. 10 guys that I could see winning this and not being surprised that they won. Beyond this list, if somebody were to win, it would be a surprising result to me. That's as far as I'm willing to go. So 10 names, and there are 4 tiers of these Masters contenders, and we'll go through them in order. Scottie Scheffler is in a tier by himself at the top. Rory McIlroy is one of these heavy favorites as well, but you can't put Rory in the same category as Scottie. Rory hasn't won a major championship in 11 years. He hasn't won a green jacket in his life. Scottie's won 2 of the last 3. Other than Pinehurst last year, he was pretty dominant in all the majors that he played in. After missing the first month of the PGA Tour season this year, he finished 2nd in his most recent event, seems to be heating up. When he's on his game, nobody's better. The 2nd tier are major champions that are currently playing well. Former champs, all playing well. Rory McIlroy, 2 wins on the PGA Tour before arriving on Magnolia Lane in Augusta. That's the first time that's happened in his career, that he's won 2 events prior to the Masters. Colin Morikawa, This is a very important stat when it comes to being successful at the Masters. It is a stat called strokes gained. The guys who can really club a golf club, can really club a golf ball from green to tee, are the ones that do very well in the strokes gained category. Colin Morikawa is leading the tour in that stat currently. Justin Thomas, he's been consistent of late. He's been playing good golf. Had a runner-up finish in the Valspar recently. So those are three former major champs playing well right now. The next tier are major champs that you can't write off, that you'd be foolish to write off. Three of them are from LIV. Don't quite know what to do with LIV results, how to assess that relative to expectation for major titles or major championships. But you have Bryson DeChambeau in this group. You have John Rahm in this group. Yeah, Brooks Koepka in this group. You know he always shows up for majors. And then my guy, can't ever count him out. The X-Man, Xander Schauffele. He rounds out the group. He's been dealing with an injury, but seems to be whipping his game back into shape at the right time. So that is, those are eight names thus far. That leaves two more spots, and there are two wild cards that have not won a major title, a major championship, that are knocking on the door, it would seem. Young Ludvig Åberg, who was the runner-up in his first ever Masters start last year, played really well in Pinehurst too. He is somebody to keep a close eye on. And then Victor Hovland, who was in the golf wilderness, it seemed, late last year and even early this year, came out of nowhere to win the Valspar. If he's on and playing confident, we know he has the tools to win on this golf course. Going back to Åberg, he finished second in the Genesis Invitational. In February, he's since missed a couple of cuts, so a little inconsistent play, but another guy that when he puts it together is incredibly dangerous and could be dangerous in Augusta this year. So there you go. 10 contenders for the Masters this year in different tiers. Scottie Scheffler by himself. The second tier, major champs that are currently playing well. Rory, Colin Morikawa, Justin Thomas. Major champs you can't write off. Bryson, Rahm, Koepka, Xander Schauffele. And then a couple wild cards who haven't won before but very well could. Ludvig Åberg and Victor Hovland, 9 and 10 in those categories. Very excited for things to get started on Thursday morning.
The Drive with Josh Graham, only on WSJS.
We have two pairs of tickets to give away to Merle Fest later this month. We also have a few pairs of tickets to go see Tyler Childers in Raleigh next week. Give us a call right now at 336-777-1600. And if you tell us something good that's happening with you, then you have your pick of either of those two shows. Again, we have just a couple of pairs of Merle Fest tickets today. And we have a few pairs of Tyler Childers as well in Raleigh. 336-777-1600. The big news of the day is that Mike Malone was fired by the Denver Nuggets, and they're not going to extend their GM, Calvin Booth. The Nuggets right now are fourth in the Western Conference standings. And this is surprising. It seems like a gigantic overreaction. The Nuggets, they haven't been really good since the All-Star break, 11 and 13 since the break, just a couple of years removed from winning the title. But this is something that we see in the NBA, where Nick Nurse was fired by the Raptors just a few years after he won the title. Frank Vogel, we know what happened to him after he won during the bubble playoffs with the Lakers in 2020. We saw it with Mike Budenholzer, who was the coach when the Bucks won it in 2021. And now, the same thing happening to Mike Malone. It's interesting which sport the manager slash coach matters the least in among major professional sports. We know how important they are in college, but in the pros, we could agree that the NFL head coach probably matters the most out of the major sports, but between baseball manager, hockey coach, and NBA coach, it's hard to figure out which of them matter the least, because baseball managers get paid next to nothing. Basketball coaches are now being discarded as if they're hockey coaches. Hockey coaches so many times get fired in the middle of a season as a way to spark the team, the same way that a football team might make a quarterback change. Oh, let's just get a new coach in there. The Hurricanes did that once. They let go of Peter Laviolette a few years after winning the Stanley Cup, bring in Paul Maurice, and that team went to the Eastern Conference Finals. So it's interesting. It follows a trend, and it does show how little NBA coaches might be viewed in NBA ownership circles amongst GMs, too. The fact that the GM isn't being brought back, too, is a very interesting piece of this puzzle. Now let's give away some tickets to go see Tyler Childers, to go to Merle Fest, and we do so in Weekly Positivity. Oh, yeah. At first you had my curiosity. Now you have my attention. WD hasn't seen Django Unchained yet. He's procrastinated, so we pushed back at the movies till tomorrow. It's almost as if he forgot that the national championship game is on a Monday and can't plan ahead. Just can't do that.
As if.
Oh, Weekly Positivity brought to you by Biscuit King.
Biscuits.
We love those biscuits. They are good.
Good biscuits.
Let's go to Nick and Clemens. He wants to go to child. Tyler Childers. Hi, Nick.
Hello.
You seem excited.
Oh, it's a beautiful day.
It really is. I was surprised it was a little bit cool when I took Willow the dog for a walk earlier, late morning, and I was welcomed by that. I had my short sleeve shirt on, and I was like, man, I might just need a light jacket. This is ideal. This is great. How are you enjoying the weather, Nick?
I am enjoying it very much. Thank you for asking.
What are some of the things you like to do in beautiful warm weather?
Well, I like to hike, and I like to bike, and I like to walk my dog.
Oh man, missed opportunity. You could have found a third thing to rhyme with hike or bike. WD, what rhymes with hike or bike?
I like Ike.
Well, that's not like a thing that you think on that for a second. What's your favorite hiking destination? Do you have one? There are a lot of them.
Oh, it's kind of that there are so many great ones here. Hanging Rock is probably my favorite local. I like Mount Mitchell, too. There's so many great opportunities here.
I like to hike. I like to bike. I like the Yankee Psych.
No, that's not good.
That's not good. Okay, Tyler, you enjoy Tyler Childers. You can go and hike up to Raleigh and see him next week. How about that?
Thank you so much. I'm grateful.
All right, yeah, stay on the line. We like gratefulness.
I like to hike. I like to ride a bike, and Carlos Rodon's going to throw a strike.
I don't even want to talk to you right now, so I'll just talk to Mike in Winston-Salem. He wants to go to Merle Fest. We're going to help him with this. Mike.
Back.
Hi, Mike. Mike.
Hey, buddy. What's going on, man?
Oh, you know, just hanging out, 3:30 in the afternoon. We have a window in the studio here. We didn't have that for the first 5 years of me doing the show here in the Triad. So when it was beautiful days like this, I wouldn't know it until I left. Now I just look out the window and wonder what I'm doing with my life. Okay, Mike, you tell me something good.
Well, number one, my mom just had a very successful back surgery about a week ago. She's 72. And it seems to have gone really well, and she's a lot less pain than she's been in for quite some time.
That's good.
So that's definitely something positive.
What's your mom's name? What's her first
name? Her name is Brooke.
Shout out to Brooke. We appreciate Brooke. We hope she is feeling well.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And then other than that, work's going good. I own a small construction company, and I'm covered up and busy every single day. So life is good, my brother.
This seems like a good time to be in construction. Am I wrong on that?
Oh, no, sir, especially for outdoor work. I mean, I do a little bit of everything, but my favorite's probably screen porches and deck building and stuff like that. So, I mean, yeah, as many decks as I can get lined up for this time of year before it gets hot, I'm all for it.
Well, you enjoy Merlefest. This is a good for a one-day pass. Just pick a day that you and the guests want to go to. I wish I was going to be there on Saturday when they do the album hour and the Avits are going to be performing, but Bonnie Raitt's going to be there on a Friday night, too. Like, you got decisions to make, my friend. You have fun there, okay?
Hey, thank you so much, brother. I appreciate y'all, as always.
You're welcome. So stay on the line. We'll get to you in a bit. Will, tell me something good with you.
Well, first of all, he called you brother, and that made me think of...
Cooper Fulang, my brother.
Come on, Malawash, my brother.
Mike and Winston, my brother.
So that's the first thing I want to get off my chest. And second, so I'm a big Game of Thrones fan.
Yeah?
And I'm pretty excited, because House of the Dragon, Season 3, just started production a couple of weeks ago. And there's a story going around, pretty big news. Yesterday we learned that for the first time in 10,000 years, they say, two direwolves have been born and brought out of extinction somehow. Somehow they were able to do this, and that's like one of the main sigils in Game of Thrones, House Stark.
Is this like advanced science to
bring
one?
Yeah, it was bioengineered somehow.
I don't like this. I don't like this. This doesn't sound good.
But it's
like when people talk about AI replacing humans, it's like making me uncomfortable. Bioengineering wolves?
But direwolves that have been extinct.
But why do...
And it's pretty cool.
Why do we need to do that?
I don't know why they did it, but I just think it's cool because you see them in the show, and now you can see them in real life.
But aren't they not pleasant creatures in the show?
Well, they're pleasant unless you're their enemy.
Right, but like, they're wolves. Like, how's that a good thing?
Well, I just think it's pretty cool.
Let's go to Tim.
They're puppies now, so that's great.
Let's go to Tim in Moxville. That sounds dangerous. Tim, it's not going to be hard to top what Will just had to say there in terms of good things. What do you have?
Well, I'm appreciative of the rain. It's good that we got yesterday. It helps my shrubbery and freshly planted blueberries. We have a pretty day, and then I'm running in the Pat Tillman virtual run this weekend. Looking forward to that. So I'm very appreciative, and the weather's broken, and it's nice springtime, and it's good.
Tell me about your shrubbery.
Well, I've planted blueberries the last 3 years, and I had them trimmed in the fall, and they trimmed them almost too much. Well, I dug them up, replanted them, and they come back to life. That's good.
That is. Tim, enjoy Merlefest, okay? Stay on the line.
Thank you.
Yeah. You and I are on the same wavelength.
Yep.
I just wanted to say the sentence. A sentence that never came out of my mouth before. Tell me about your shrubbery.
It's good stuff.
Keenan's in Kernersville.
Kernersville!
He wants to go to Tyler Childers. Let's help him with that. Keenan, tell me something good.
Okay, well, I'll tell you something not good first. Okay. These allergies have really been getting the best of me.
So,
and
how have you gotten yourself
serious.
Past it? Yeah, I mean, that's
well,
that's,
I
that's
haven't.
Good.
That's why I'm talking all, you know. Anyway, found a car for my wife, right? A new Audi SQ7. It's a nice vehicle, and the only one I found that met her criteria was up in Connecticut.
What was her criteria?
So, just color, the trim, all that sort of stuff.
Good for you.
Things she cares about.
How many miles were on it?
I think maybe 50,000.
That's pretty good. That's good.
We got a pretty good deal on it, though. It is a beast of a vehicle.
So you got to ride up to Connecticut to get it?
No, so we flew up to get it, and we drove it home. Oh. However, what is good is the fact that we made it home at all, because I don't know if you've ever been to Connecticut.
I have.
Or New York, mm-hmm. or New Jersey.
I've been
But
to
they
all
drive like madmen.
They do.
And I used to think that, you know, maybe folks around here needed to work on, no, it's everyone there has a death wish. And they're all doing about 100, 110, and it was nothing. It was nothing for our Uber driver's doing about $1.20 and $1.35. So we are pleased to be home. And again, it is good to be alive.
Yes, it is, Keenan. Enjoy Tyler Childers, okay?
Thank you.
There he goes. The callers really brought it today. It's excellent stuff. Like, all I got is Miller's was fun.
Yeah.
Hanging out with folks at the station and
good nachos.
Some listeners. It was Daniel's first day at his daycare yesterday. He seemed to enjoy it. Appreciate those folks. And that's been Weekly Positivity. Shrubbery.
This is it. Ready?
Alright, hold on.
Alright, do it.
Alright, listen up.
It's The Drive with Josh Graham.
WD's telling me that John Dell has arrived on the premises prior to arriving at Augusta, and he's bearing gifts.
He's got some stuff for us.
What do you have?
Well, he brought in some Master's Trail mix. Got that?
Let's go.
Got the pimento cheese sandwich.
Master's week. I will definitely take the pimento cheese sandwich. We'll get to John in just a bit because we got some breaking news to react to. Seth Trimble has posted on his Instagram that he's back. Following up on what he said after North Carolina fell in the tournament to Ole Miss, that he'd be returning to school. Seth Trimble is going to be the leader in that locker room. And that shouldn't surprise anybody because he was already that last season along with RJ Davis. After difficult moments, he was the one that would answer questions after games, do so in ways that represent the team really well. No better example than the way he stood up for Jalen Withers after the lane violation loss against Duke in the ACC tournament. He is maybe, along with RJ, my favorite guy to visit with, was my favorite guy to visit with on this most recent team. I'm happy that he's back. In that regard, he handles himself so well. And if he didn't return, there would be no homegrown upperclassmen on this roster. So having somebody who understands the culture, coming back, homegrown upperclassmen, that's all fantastic. The ultimate question with Seth, what's his role going to be? What exactly has he been promised? Has he been promised anything other than, you can assume, an upgrade in his NIL compensation? Because it's likely that they're going to bring Drake Powell back. That's something that they were going to prioritize with their NIL revenue share. WD, if you look on social media, in the comments on his Instagram, Seth's post, Drake Powell commented on it and said, "My vet." And Seth replied to that, "One more question mark?"
Yeah, you already know what's going down.
Drake Powell's going to come back. So if you look at the starting five, you just brought in Vassar from Arizona. Caleb Wilson is a top 10 player. He's at power forward. So there's your front court right there. You have Drake Powell at small forward slash on the wing. Where does Seth Trimble fit in? Are you going to have Seth Trimble in your starting five? Where? You might say two guard, but if you're North Carolina and your starting two guard shot 26% from three last year, that's not very good. Honestly, a better fit for a two guard more than Seth Trimble would be the guy you brought in from West Virginia last week,
who's Jonathan Powell, 6'6", 3 inches taller than Seth Trimble, attempted three times as many threes as Seth did and made 10% more. A 35% three-point shooter made more threes than any freshman in the Big 12 last year, Jonathan Powell. That guy would make more sense as being the two for you than Seth Trimble would. And he's a couple of years younger, so that's a guy that you're going to want to build more around. But we said when Powell was brought in, ideally he'd be a bench piece. You don't want that guy to be starting for you right out of the gate, 8 points per game out of the Big 12. You're North Carolina. You're aspiring to be like Duke. You're aspiring to be one of these top 10 programs contending for national championships. So while you can assemble a roster that will give you all the good feelings, right? Oh, we like these guys a lot. Even though you were crushing the results that were on the court, Seth Trimble's role, it's going to sound harsh. I don't mean it to. His role needs to be what Mason Gillis's role at Duke was. That's what it needs to be. Leadership, older guy. He was on a national title team, a team that went to the national championship game last year. He was the sixth man of the year in the entire Big Ten Conference. And he came in and played spot minutes for Duke. Ideally, that's the role that you have Seth Trimble playing for you because you have so much talent on your roster that that's what it's relegated to. There's a role for him. He's important. I'm not trying to minimize Mason Gillis, but that's what it has to be. If Seth Trimble is starting on the court for North Carolina, you're not a top 10 basketball team. And that's what you want this team to be, right? So the role ultimately is important. Jonathan Powell's a better player than Seth Trimble is. In a better conference, he put up more numbers, and he's a couple of years younger. So there's higher potential there, too. So Seth Trimble's not a starting player for you. He's not. If you want to be the team that Tar Heel fans are saying that the standard is the standard for, the standard you're trying to hold Hubert Davis to. Lance writes in, put Trimble anywhere on the court. He's a dog. He impacts the game all over the court. Anywhere? We're going to have Seth Trimble be the starting point guard? Hey, let's put him anywhere. He could be your center. Let's put him at point guard when he's not a point guard. Let's put him at the two guard, even though he shoots 26% from three. What he is a really good defender. He's a vet. He understands your culture. There's a place on the team for Seth Trimble. That place shouldn't be in the starting five. And I like, again, Seth Trimble. I hope this isn't coming off as me being a hater. It's not what I'm hoping this is coming off as.
Well, ultimately, it's going to depend on what else they do in the portal.
Well, yeah.
Because
here's the other problem.
If you load up and you have him coming off the bench,
if you load up, here's the problem. Look at any list of the top college transfer guys out there. Most of them have teams already. Who you gonna get? Who you gonna get? All the names that you bring up. Oh, that guy plays for this team now. Oh, that guy is already committed to this team. So if it's a situation where Seth Trimble's coming back because you don't have a better option out there, buddy, that's not a place you want to be. If you're Hubert, that's not a place you want to be if you're the University of North Carolina. Shifting things before we get to Dell. The Capture the Flag sweepstakes are on. There is about a month until the lottery. WD, the ping pong balls are going to be a popping, a clanging, and we're going to figure out where teams go. Love that drop. Outstanding. And Cooper Flagg, let me dispel a couple of theories that are out there right now. There's a theory out there that Cooper isn't for sure leaving to the NBA. He's coming back to Duke, right? That's what people are saying. He's coming back. You watch, Josh. I'll watch him go into the draft. So let's dispel that one first. Cooper is not returning to the Blue Devils. That would push his ability to make the Supermax in the league a year back. his family seems pretty locked in on a plan that's been clear with their his brother being in Greensboro Day, spending a year living there to be close to Cooper, his year at Duke. It's all part of the plan, and you're not reclassifying to pass on being the number one pick. The second theory that's out there, worth dispelling, is that Cooper might strong arm a team in the player empowerment era. Say, I'm not going to play for you. If you end up picking me, I'm going to go back to Duke. Cooper, late Saturday night in San Antonio, told Adam Zagoria of NJ.com that he would be happy with any team that selects him. He said the right things. And that shouldn't surprise you for anybody who's been around Cooper this year. There isn't a nightmare scenario. There isn't a nightmare team that could draft him and he ends up in the worst of spots. Bill Simmons even pointed it out on his podcast earlier this week.
The problem for that theory is I don't think there's like a truly horrible team to go to this year in the NBA. Do you? Like even Charlotte, like is that a bad situation? Like they have a new front office, new owner. Everybody likes Charles Lee. They have some assets. Like that's not a disaster. Washington's not a disaster. I don't see a team where I'd be like, oh man, I feel so bad for him. He went there.
Exactly. The Hornets, they'll have the best odds for the top pick along with Utah and Washington. Those have fun pieces. Washington had a top pick a few years, or last year they had a top pick, and that's a fun city that would be good to see them be good, Washington. Utah has Walker Kessler and more pieces than even Washington has. Charlotte, of course, you mentioned Charles Lee and the new ownership. You have LaMelo Ball, Miles Bridges. We'll see about Mark Williams, Brandon Miller. So yeah, a 1-in-7 chance, 14% odds for those three teams at the bottom. And if the Hornets land the top pick, it'd be the biggest headline for the franchise in over 30 years since they landed Larry Johnson and Alonzo Mourning in back-to-back years. There are places you don't want to see him go, though. Those places are as follows. New Orleans, 12.5% chance. They got AD, they got Zion, they made it work. They did not make it work with either of them. Do not give them a third generational talent. Let's not do that. Philadelphia, 10.5% odds. That's just a team that has organizationally whiffed. And I hope they don't get rewarded for whiffing in the form of a top pick and getting Cooper Flagg. San Antonio, 6% chance. That's the 8th best odds out there. You already got Wimby. You're going to get Wimby, Stephon Castle, and Cooper Flagg. Give me a break. There are fun scenarios out there. Toronto, this great American talent goes to Canada. And Canada's going to figure out a way to put Cooper Flagg tariffs on the United States.
Yeah, let's not do that. Let's not make tariff jokes
or not have
both.
Toronto. Okay.
Both.
Where's Gary Hahn?
Let's go to the sidelines. Tony Haynes.
Dallas would be the funniest scenario. 1% chance.
Got Kyrie there.
So then Nico can step out here and say, hey, yo, I was playing chess. Everybody else is playing checkers.
It was all part of the plan.
All part of the plan. If we had Luka, we don't have the 1% chance. And we look at us now. We got Cooper Flagg with AD, and we're rebuilding the way. We're better off than we were before. Just would be hilarious. So the Cooper Flagg sweepstakes, the Capture the Flagg sweepstakes, they are on. Now let's talk golf. What local ties are there to this year's Masters? We'll discuss with a man who has covered the Masters pretty much every year over the last quarter century. John Dell is in studio with us from the Winston-Salem Journal and Greensboro News and Record, and he joins us next on The Drive.
Drive with Josh Graham, only on WSJS.
I'm so jealous of John Dell, Winston-Salem Journal, Greensboro News and Record, because what year is this covering the Masters for you now? Have we reached a quarter century? Oh, let's make sure your mic's on.
Is it?
Yeah, we got it.
Now all right, yeah, number 27.
27, so we're past a quarter century.
Hello, friends.
This tournament.
Yes.
It's great. Feel bad for Jim Nantz because Nantz retired from doing the Final Four, and then his team goes to the championship game Thus, he has to do the quick turnaround that he was used to doing before, and his team loses last night.
I think him being a fan, he probably liked that better than having to announce a game. I think, you know, you're more of a fan. You don't have to worry about being objective.
That's a good point. He did have his nice little hoodie on right behind the Houston bench. A lot of people are upset with me. I'm hearing from B-Dot. B-Dot putting it always in subtle, gentle terms. Josh, you're an idiot. In response to me saying, One Shining Moment actually isn't a good song. Almost any song that you place over those highlights at the end of a tournament over 40 years would probably catch on. Like, you just place, like, if you put an Earth, Wind, and Fire song there that played after every tournament for 40 years,
no.
It'd probably be a song that a lot of people like, because guess what? It's the tournament, it's highlights, it's fun.
It's what TV says should be popular. So
are you with me? Is this an outrageous take?
I like One Shiny Moment.
It's a good song. So, you know, it really is.
You could play Memories, Barbara Streisand.
That's great. If it was Memories by Barbara Streisand and you add basketball highlights over them for 40 years, then people would be saying, Josh, you're crazy for saying you don't like Memories by Barbara Streisand. Like, again, it's the song's fine. It's fine.
He has to tell us. He has an annual tweet.
And now I got people telling me that they danced with their mom to One Shining Moment at their wedding.
I hope you feel bad.
I don't. I said to that person, that is a very strange choice. Can you imagine that? What was your first dance song at your wedding?
With my mom or?
Oh, that's right. With your mom. Sorry. This is the circumstance with your mom.
Yeah.
What did you dance with your mom?
I can't even remember.
Do you remember what it was with your wife?
Oh, yeah. Heaven, Bryan Adams, because our first concert was Bryan Adams.
See, that's fantastic.
At Greensboro Coliseum.
If it was One Shining Moment, that'd be very weird. That'd be a weird thing to have.
But you know the guys at the wedding would be getting up for that one.
Okay,
you
but know what about it. Everybody
proving
else?
My point.
That's going to be great. Will Dalton's going to have the Star Wars theme as his
No, his I'm going to do One Shining Moment too now.
That'll be great. Okay, let's get to golf. What local ties are you most interested in following when you get down to Augusta later this week?
Well, obviously, Will Zalatoris and Cameron Young are established PGA Tour players, and they tee off a couple tee times apart early Thursday. And then Evan Beck is another former Wake Forest player who's the U.S. mid-amateur champion. He tried to go pro golf route and hurt his back, and he regained his amateur status and still plays pretty good. He's in finance, so he doesn't play all the time, but he won the U.S. Mid-Am, and he's playing in his first Masters, so that's kind of cool. I've talked to him a couple times in the last week or so and had a big story early in the week. But he tees off with Bubba Watson, 11-21, on Thursday. So Evan's a good dude. He graduated, I think, in 2012, 13, something like that, and played for Jerry for 4 years, was two-time All-ACC player, originally from Virginia Beach, and I think he still lives in that area. But his office is in Washington, D.C. for his financial job that he has. But those are the three. And then Aaron Rye, mm-hmm. who won in Greensboro in August, qualified for the Masters.
Won.
Yeah.
He did win.
He did win.
Had the unfortunate mishap? Who was the Duke guy with the weird name that had the mishap on 16 and completely melted down at the Wyndham last year?
It was a long time ago. I can't remember.
WD, look that up. But yeah, Aaron Rye is your Wyndham champion. He's in there. I'm going to be following Ashkay Bhatia.
Akshay, by the way.
Akshay, thank you.
Yes.
His home course, my dad does some work at in Wakefield, right outside of the city of Wake Forest.
Left-hander.
Ooh. Akshay is a left-hander?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yes.
I did not know that.
I followed him when he was 15 years old at the Wyndham Championship qualifier, and he almost qualified for the Wyndham at age 15.
So that's a guy I'm keeping an eye on. And here's the group that they threw Akshay in. Rory McIlroy and Ludvig Åberg, who last year in his first Masters start was runner-up.
Yeah. Akshay's going to have to play. He's got some company in his threesome, so that'll be good. I think the pressure of playing with, you know, I mean, that's going to help Akshay, I think. He's a nice kid. I've talked to him a few times. And he's
very bright.
Yeah.
Tall. He has the specs sometimes, a lot of times when he plays. Who was that guy that last year, Will? Name slips me.
We got a couple of... is it Max Gracierman?
Yeah, it was Gracierman.
Okay. Yep.
He had the... I forget if it was 15 or 16 or both.
Well, actually, he's one of those guys that didn't go to college. He was homeschooled and then got turned pro when he was like 17. Did it the hard way. And he's become a success. So he's someone to watch.
When you are putting together a criteria for players that might be successful in this tournament, what are some of the things that you are cycling in your head, given how many tournaments you've watched there?
It really comes down to putting, I think. If you're not on your A game with your putter, you're not going to win at Augusta ever. So I think it always usually comes down to putting. If you are two putting every green, you can win, quite honestly, especially if you get in, you know, get to hit the par fives and two. I mean, I just think it comes down to the putter. And if you're not confident with your putter, I don't think you can win. And I think it's been proven.
It seems to me that the primary storyline at Augusta this week, especially without the presence of Tiger Woods with the Achilles, is Rory McIlroy, who has not had the career slam. The one area he's short is the Masters. He hasn't won a green jacket in 11 tries, I think. And he's gone 38 consecutive major starts without winning. Last year came close at Pinehurst, of course. And next month, Quail Hollow is going to be hosting the PGA, where Rory's won four times. I'm at the point with Rory that if he doesn't win at Augusta when he has two wins for the first time in his career going into Augusta, two wins on tour already going in, or doesn't win at the PGA Championship, I'm at the point where when it happens, I will be surprised at this point.
Well, I think, you know, you hate to say it, but like at the Masters, he's got to sort of back into it. If he could post a score and be in the clubhouse and have someone chase him, I think he's got a shot. But if he's out there trying to make birdie and he's trailing, that's when it becomes dicey.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. So a lot of people would think that Rory wouldn't do well playing ahead because of 2012 and lead and all that. You're saying it would be best case scenario if he posts a score on Thursday.
Post and wait. And then I think maybe he's got a shot. I mean, that, you know, that's happened before there. You know, everyone who looks at that scoreboard and you're all of a sudden a meltdown. So I think if he can post maybe on Sunday, if he's in contention, then, you know, maybe he can win a green jacket. I mean, I think that's the storyline that everyone's looking at. And the patrons, they would go crazy. And I think that would be well received if Rory won this week.
John Dell's with us, Winston-Salem Journal, Greensboro News and Record. Read his stuff this week when he gets to Augusta. He brought us trail mix, pimento cheese. And you might be thinking, Josh, the tournament doesn't start till Thursday. Why does John just have pimento cheese from the Masters in his fridge to bring to you? You were at Augusta this past weekend.
Yep.
Why?
I always go Saturday and Sunday. Wake Forest women are always in the Augusta National Women's Amateur. It's one of the best women's amateur tournaments in the world, really. It's the sixth year. And Wake Forest has had a golfer finish in the top 10 every year, at least one. A couple times they had two. Jen Kupcho won the first one in 2019, Wake Forest All-America. It was her senior year.
Oh, she went on Fallon after that.
She won that first one. And Wake's always had, you know, Kim Llewellyn does a great job there. And they're always, you know, I think they're ranked sixth or seventh right now. And so I go and cover that. And then Sunday is the drive, chip, and putt. And we had a kid from Bermuda Run. Lives in Clemens. He played in that. He was in the 12-13 boys. He's a Clemens middle school seventh grader, Jason Wong. So I went and covered him on Sunday, and just kind of like to get the lay of the land there at Augusta and get see the course and everything. And you know, they had all those storms that went through there, you know, with the hurricane, and it doesn't look like anything's hit Augusta National, but around the neighborhoods and stuff, it looks pretty bad.
Really?
Oh, a lot of roofs are still they haven't been repaired yet. And so, but Augusta National's fine, the course. So it's good to get out there on that weekend, and then I go back later this week. So.
Okay. What traditions do you have going to Augusta? 27 years. Are there places you go to appreciate the fact that you're there? I only think about it because I was seeing earlier today, Scott Van Pelt, there's this tree
He likes to stand under in a spot that he sees multiple spots on the golf course where he centers himself. He's like, it's special that I get to be here. I want to be here.
Well, I usually, when I get there, I go to the course, and by the big scoreboard, I kind of go out right there, and then I go underneath the tree where it's kind of the big tree near the clubhouse that everyone kind of mingles.
That's like the meeting spot, yeah, since nobody has their phone.
Yeah, and I like to go there and just look around and kind of see everyone. And it's amazing to me when I look at the faces of the people, you can tell which ones are there for the first time. You can actually tell that they don't blink because they're so excited about being there for the first time. So that's kind of cool. But Ray's Cafe is a nice eating spot that I always try to go to every time I get there.
What do you get at Ray's Cafe?
I had the salmon this past weekend, and it was really good. So the Ray's is kind of off the beaten path. It's like in a neighborhood somewhere. Not a lot of people know it, and it's really good. And there are a few other places, but it's just a special place, and you go and the air is just different. You breathe the air, and you're like, wow, this is Augusta National. You know how much history is here? And this is the 89th version of this tournament. So it's I think it'll stick around for a while.
Yeah. Jim Nantz has already called his shot, saying he's going to retire after the 100th.
Well, the joke was if Houston would have won, Fred Couples and Jim Nantz may have never gotten to Augusta. They may have just said, you know what? We're not going. Sorry. We're going to celebrate.
What other local stories have you been following? This is what I appreciate about having you here, because your boots on the ground, you're covering, high school, college, pro. I mean, Winston-Salem State.
Well, I leave Mark Pruitt. He's our high school guy. I leave him with the high schools. But no, I'm doing a story on Winston-Salem State's women's flag football team. They have a 7-on-7 flag football team, and they're playing in a CIAA championship in Charlotte. So I went and talked to them. I'm writing a story on that, and that's kind of cool. I mean, football school like Winston-Salem State, and they got a women's team, is pretty good. They're second seed out of eight CIAA schools have a women's flag football team, 7-on-7. So it's kind of cool. I've been looking at that, and then Bowman Gray Racing's coming up, so I'm kind of getting geared up for that. And then Wake football, a little bit spring football. I'll probably head to their spring game and then go to Bowman Gray's opener on
spring
that Saturday.
Game.
Spring scrimmage / let's not show anybody anything because we're a new coach.
That's it. Same thing for Bill Belichick doing similar things. Spring game.
Well, apparently, too, that the ACC wanted to broadcast it, and they said no. We're not broadcasting this year. So there's going to be very little. There's not going to be streamed. It's going to be fans can go and watch. TV, our local TV can, film some plays, but it's not going to be able to view it anywhere, which is smart by the coach, because why show everyone what you have,
Yeah, nobody seems to have a good read on what exactly Jake Dickert is up to.
Ironically enough, I sat down at Augusta this weekend right next to the Marietta, Georgia newspaper guy, who's the beat writer for Kennesaw State, who plays Wake Forest in the first game. So we had some good conversations.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They have a new coach, too, Kennesaw State, Jerry Mack. So we were
Jerry Mack, like of NC Central?
Yes.
Jerry Mack?
He's there. And so we talked a little bit. What are the odds? I sit right next to the beat writer, Kennesaw State, who's coming to play Wake Forest.
See you in Winston.
That's right.
Not too long down the way. What's been the best story you've heard in the aftermath, now that we're a few months removed of the NASCAR race at Bowman Gray? I'm sure things you hear about weeks later, months later.
Well, it went really well, and I think NASCAR's coming back next year and the year after. There were floating some idea of going to Brazil with this all-star race, but I think that fell through. So I think they're going to be coming to Winston again. When they'll make an official announcement, I don't know. Maybe they'll do the dog and pony show again sometime this summer.
So you think it might be a multi-year commitment?
What I've gathered, I've heard they signed a three-year contract with City of Winston-Salem. NASCAR did. So
it'd be amazing.
I mean, the bottom line is NASCAR would like more people to come to this race, even though it's full at 14, 15,000. But how cool was it when it was full? I mean, if you get a 55,000 seat stadium and it's not full, or arena, or racetrack, and it's not full, it doesn't look as good. But I just, so I think it went well, and I think it'll come back to Winston-Salem. I hope it does, because it was great for the city.
Yeah, I want to be there next year with a newborn. I was watching it home on TV, and just the energy you could feel, and hearing Chris Myers' voice and all the others who were like, this is like really energetic compared to what they experienced in the past.
Well, our columnist Scott Sexton went out there too, and really the only glitch was everyone leaving at once, and they all had to get on the shuttles at once to take them to the parking at a Legacy Stadium and downtown, and that was kind of a, they need to shore that up. But other than that, that was about the only complaints I heard.
Wow. Okay. So we have Bowman Gray season starting. How many weeks?
April 19th.
I was about to say next weekend, not this weekend, but following weekend.
Same day as Wake Spring scrimmage.
Scrimmage. That's what we got. So they'll keep you busy.
Yep.
Do you like Rory this week?
I do. I like Rory because I think, like you mentioned, he's won a couple times. He's got some mojo, and you know, and the course suits him because he hits it a mile, and you know, the closer you are to the green, better chance you have. It's, you know, it's not a that's not rocket science. So I just think, you know, and I think it'd be cool for the sport if Rory won the Masters. I mean, you know, let's be honest, without Tiger and Phil and all, you know, back in the day, golf isn't as, I don't know, want to say exciting, but it's not on the front of everyone's news. And I think Rory winning would bring pro golf up a level. And I think that it'd be cool for, you know, cool for everyone who's a Rory fan. I know there's a lot of them out there.
I'm interested, like, how many guys, like, how wide is the list in your mind of players ballpark that you think could win this thing? Is it a group of 10? Is it a group of 20?
Well, I wrote down a group of 5. Rory, Bryson, Justin Thomas, Xander, Schauffele, and Scotty. Now, Scotty's the only one that's won it, and he's won it twice.
Yeah.
So those four other guys have never won it.
So I have those 5 names down, and I'll add a few. See, I have my list. This is as wide as I was going to go, because the way I wanted to ballpark it was I would be surprised. It would be a surprise to me if one of these 10 guys didn't win. And I got Scotty, you mentioned Justin Thomas, Rory McIlroy, Bryson, and Xander Schauffele. I also have Morikawa, as I discussed. Yep. And, I mean, they're just the live guys I can't write off, like Rahm and Koepka. And then I have his wild cards who haven't won a major before, Ludvig Åberg, and just because he won the Valspar recently, Victor Hovland. That's my list. I might even whittle it down from that closer to what you have, but that's my list.
Well, a dark horse is Billy Horschel because Florida just won the national championship, and Billy is a diehard Florida Gator.
That's so true.
Maybe that'll carry him in the first round. We'll see if he can do it for 4 rounds. But never underestimate when your school wins a national championship in basketball and then you play that week. So we'll see.
What does that mean for Fred Couples?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, Fred's 65 years old, so I think Father Time has. But another neat thing.
He's in the field somewhere. I got to see where he's teeing.
And the thing about Will Zalatoris, he's playing with the oldest guy in the field, Bernard Langer, who's going to shut it down after this is his final one.
Saw that. 67.
And Noah Kent, who's a 20-year-old from Iowa. He goes to the University of Iowa. So Will is playing with the oldest and the youngest in the field in his threesome. So.
That's fun. That's what I rely on you for nuggets like that. John Dell, have fun in Augusta this week. I hope you bring that hoodie with you because it's probably going to be a little rainy, a little cold at points. And thank you so much for paying the visit. We'll have to do this again maybe next week if something fun happens.
Yeah, yeah.
To recap.
Like people ask me all the time, what's it like covering Augusta? I say, well, it doesn't suck. So, I mean, it's good.
I thought he was going to say, they ask you what it's like to be on the drive with Josh Graham.
Doesn't suck, right.
It's the ultimate sell. That's it.